Happy Memo Day, everybody. You know, I just finished breakfast across the street with my friend from New York, and we decided to bring him by here to maybe talk about some of the things that are in the news. I am joined today by very stable genius, former White House Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci, the man, the myth, the legend, the mooch. There is breaking news. The House Intelligence Committee has released a damning memo suggesting that the FBI and DOJ colluded with Democrats to undermine and spy on the Trump presidential campaign. We will get Anthony's first public comments on the memo. Then we will find out whether President Trump really is a very stable genius, who the good guys and the bad guys are in the White House, how the Mueller investigation ends, and where the Trump train steams off to next. I'm Michael Knowles, and this is The Michael Knowles Show. So is there anything going on in the news today? I don't know. Before we get to all of that, before we get to that, folks, listen, I know that Anthony Scaramucci, he's a hustler. This guy has a lot of talents. He's worked on a lot of skills in his life. He's bounced from career to other aspects of industry, into politics, back into finance. And you know how he does that? It's because he's got a lot of skills, and you should too. The Skillshare is an online learning platform with over 18,000 classes in design, business, technology, and more. You can take classes in graphic design, social media marketing, illustration, mobile photography, communications, just to name a few. They have wonderful, wonderful classes. Whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, start a side hustle, maybe make it all the way up to the White House, or just explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. This is really good. I'm taking one now on time management because, you know, it takes a lot of my day to not write any books. Sometimes I don't have time to not write a book at the end of the day. That's why if you have time management or you can stop procrastinating, that's just one of the classes available on Skillshare. They have a million gazillion really good ones, over 18,000 courses available. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for my listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That is less than $1. That is basically free. You get 2 months for 99 cents. There is no reason for you not to take advantage of this. This is one of the great benefits. We try to be philanthropists here, give back to society, build up good citizens. Be a good citizen. Learn something. Go get 2 months for 99 cents. Skillshare is offering Michael Knowles Show listeners 2 months of unlimited access to 18,000 classes for 99 cents. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/Michael. M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Again, go to Skillshare.com/Michael to start your 2 months now. Marshall, what is it?
Skillshare.com/Michael.
Skillshare.com/Michael. Anthony, thank you for being here.
Very well read.
The mooch is here.
Skillshare, now. I'm going to go on Skillshare.
He's got to go now. We're going to even...
get some new skills. you introduced me improperly, though. I'm actually an unstable, non-genius. Mm. Okay, those are the coffee mugs that my family's made up for me.
The unstable, non-genius.
So Sunday mornings, I got to drink a coffee out of a non-stable, non-genius, or instable, non-genius.
You're going to have to send me one of those. That sounds almost as good as the leftist tears tumbler. And there are a lot of leftist tears pouring out today, by the way.
I'm super jealous of you, by the way. I mean, the fact that I've written 3 books and haven't been able to sell one book, other than the ones that I bought myself
of
and
course,
put in my basement.
In the basement.
And you're writing about nothing and selling hundreds of thousands of books. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, you might be an unstable non-genius. I am a non-writing author. So yeah. There's a lot
you.
Of inversion that goes on in these great skills. We were having breakfast when this memo stuff broke.
Yeah.
We were having breakfast when the news broke. Andrew McCabe confirmed that no FISA warrant would have been sought without the Steele dossier information, which was ordered and paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democrat Party. Is there a conspiracy at the FBI and other agencies to take down Donald Trump?
Again, I'm not sure. I'm not a conspiracy person myself, so I'm not going to say that there's a conspiracy. But if you think about the events today, you have to ask yourself if the right protocols and checks and balances are in place in these situations to make sure that the politicization, if I said that properly, of an agency that is supposed to be as non-political as possible to mm-hmm. ensure the integrity of our system and our political system and our legal system, well, boy, I think they've got to probably tighten that up a lot.
And this was
the president was exonerated today on a lot of things that he was saying back in March, Michael, which you know.
That's absolutely right. He was exonerated. People were spewing fake news. I know, we talk, CNN is already trying to spin this thing. They're saying it's a Republican memo, it's this or that. They're so frustrated that their lies have been called out. President Trump observed this. He said, top officials at the FBI and DOJ politicized the sacred investigative process in favor of Democrats and against Republicans. Do you think that means, if he's exonerated today, that it's time to fire Mueller, that it's time to end this investigation?
Again, I don't know. I mean, I'm not inside the White House anymore, and I'm not part of those strategy sessions, but my gut tells me it would be a bad move to fire Mueller, primarily because what ends up happening there, and if you're not to bore your listeners or viewers with history, but when they fired Archibald Cox on the on that great Saturday evening massacre, I think that put the administration into a tailspin. I think they completely lost their footing. I think the president's on pretty strong footing right now. I saw reports this morning that he's got a 49% approval rating post State of the Union address, which I thought was a spectacular State of the Union address. And so he's got a lot of things going his way, momentum-wise, the economy, the right policies on the economy, the right policies for the middle class and lower middle class families. And so all of that together in the soup, I would say don't fire Mueller. I believe that there's absolutely no collusion there. I know the president believes that.
No collusion with Russia. There's
no collusion
Trump
with Russia.
Collusion.
No. Right. Now, what they will say, well, did the Russians interfere in the election? Okay, Mike Pompeo says that they did. I'll take the CIA director at his word. He's a high-integrity guy.
They've interfered with many of our elections.
And that's my point. They probably have interfered with our elections for as long as they have been in existence. So that's probably 1917 to today. Unfortunately, that's the world that we live in. But to say that the Republican Party's candidate colluded with the Russians, I don't believe that. I was there. Yes, I was there for 11 days in the White House, but I was there for 18 months on the campaign as a member of the executive transition team, and I didn't see anything like that. And so I'm pretty confident, more than highly confident, the president will be exonerated. But here's the issue. We're in a very highly polarized society. The president's been right about a lot of things, and stylistically, his adversaries don't like him. And so if he fires Mueller, that will be a touch and fire storm that he doesn't need right now. Mm-hmm. The momentum is his friend. I would leave the guy alone.
That's right, because it would also distract from the cycle of, we have evidence Democrats and Barack Obama's government acted improperly. Why overshadow that news cycle and throw yourself and expose yourself to more vulnerability?
I don't think there's any need to do that. Now, I don't know Robert Mueller personally, but the president also said the New York Times a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that he expects him to treat him fairly. The people that know Robert Mueller personally think he is a fair and judicious person. I think that what happened today as it relates to the memo will probably make him even more cautious and more judicious in terms of treating this matter before the president. So, by and large, it was a good day for America, because what we have to do is we have to get back to what the Daily Wire wants, what you want personally, what I want personally, and what's in the Federalist Papers. We got to get back to the government serving the people and the government not losing sight of that, where they think that the people are really serving them. We've been gradually flipping that as we've become more of a statist society. And we need to return it back to the individuals, and certainly the president and his administration are trying to do that.
I remember I had the privilege of meeting with Justice Scalia before he died, and he said that the greatest threat to liberty in the Republic are these overwhelming, unaccountable agencies out of the executive branch that don't have a lot of oversight, that govern as they will without democratic checks. Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch said, quote, "You had Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party try to hide the fact that they gave money to GPS Fusion, Fusion GPS, to create a dossier which was used by their allies in the Obama administration to convince a court, misleadingly, by all accounts, to spy on Trump, on the Trump team." President Trump tweeted out that quote. Do people need to go to jail for this, and will they?
I don't know. They might, but here's what I would say, and again, I don't like, even during the campaign, I never attacked Secretary Clinton personally. I never attacked President Obama personally. I really just wanted to talk about the policies, but I do think it's fair to talk about the facts, okay? And if you go back to July of 2016, it was discovered that Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Secretary Clinton's team did certain things to manipulate the process, to manipulate Senator Bernie Sanders out of the process, okay? Yep. And that probably cost her the election, because millennials that wanted to support him, they didn't cross over as aggressively to support her once she got the nomination, because they thought the system was rigged. Then Donna Brazile, who's going to be joining me tonight on the Bill Maher Show on HBO, basically wrote a book about this. And so there are facts here where these people like to take the pea under the shell and they like hiding it from the American people. And so you have to be very, very worried about that, that there's an ascent for power, there's a quest or a lust for power, where people think they can curve the rules to get power to bend towards them.
Right.
And that's very un-American. And so I'm not saying anybody has to go to jail, but it does seem like the processes that are put in place in these agencies need to be tightened.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a good analogy, the shell game of people just like from Coney Island or something. That's what you're seeing at these agencies a lot.
It's just really unfair because you're relying on the integrity of the system. The United States has so many valuable assets. We have our great people, all the great human capital. We have the great resources of the nation. The fact that we become so powerful because we're basically an island continent. Mm-hmm. We were protected for hundreds of years from these big oceans. It's all of this great stuff. But the number one thing that we have, and this is what Justice Scalia would say, and I knew him reasonably well, is that we have a system that we put in place that checks power. The balance of power written into the Constitution, the judicial branch, legislative branch, and the executive power, each are checking each other, subordinates individuals to the law. Mm-hmm. It's what Cicero once said 2,200 years ago, that we are slaves to the law in order to be free. And if you think about the foundational principles of the country, we put ourselves in that position, and so you don't like seeing people subverting that for their own personal gain.
Okay? It could tear the whole edifice down. If
it can, because you know, Reagan said, and I was probably 22 at the time that he said it, so it's 32 years ago, Reagan said that you're always 25 years away from potentially losing your democracy. Mm-hmm. If you don't embolden, empower, and educate the youth, you don't explain to them the beauty of the system that they're living in. Certainly the system has flaws, but it is the best system. Churchill once said about democracy is that it's a horrific form of government until you consider all the other forms of government.
Except for all the other ones we've ever tried.
And so he's right, and this is a very, very precious thing that we have. And so we've got to check people that are in power. And these agencies, unfortunately, because they're not part of the orbit of that check and balance system, sometimes things can go awry.
They're a little extra constitutional. They seem to subvert a lot of the constitutional order that has ruled the country for 200 years.
They have, by and large, been extremely helpful. I mean, you're never going to see me, who lived in New York during 9/11, rail on the FBI.
And there are great
rail
agents
on our
FBI.
Counterterrorism units. I'm not going to do anything like that. I think the president's tweet more or less spoke for himself. He knows that the rank and file are very solid.
That's right.
But he's just saying that these processes that were put in place, particularly if that Steele memo or whatever that was, that oppositional research led to all of that bananas stuff that was happening, that was actually very unfair to the system. And so, listen, we got to come up with a better way to organize ourselves so that doesn't happen again.
I've talked to other administration officials. They say the damn shame about this is that because of the political appointees at these agencies, the Obama-era appointees at these agencies, all of the good agents at the FBI or DOJ, they're being unfairly marred, even though they're good agents. It's these political appointees mm-hmm. that have acted inappropriately and used the government for political purposes.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, so it'll change. I mean, here's the greatest thing about our country. We've had to heal ourselves many times. We healed ourselves after the Civil War. We healed ourselves after the Great Depression. We've healed ourselves after the Watergate situation. And so what we'll do is we'll come together and heal ourselves. We've got a lot of great things that are happening right now. Today, they printed a 2.9% wage increase.
Yeah.
So middle-class wages and lower middle-class wages are going up.
First time in 9 years.
This is the first time since the Great Recession. I got trained as an economist. I can tell you that our 2006 wages have still not reach that high watermark, and we're 12 years out from there. And so we've got to get these families back on the grid. I don't know if you saw the manufacturing data. We've had a huge manufacturing surge. We're manufacturing now at the level that we were in 2004 before we went into that great slippage. And so these are super positive things for the country. What happened yesterday is the tax plan went into effect, and so there's more disposable income for each American. It's not crumbs. $2,000 is a meaningful amount of money in somebody's pocket if they're making $50,000 a year. And so hopefully that'll go towards investments, savings, fortifying their family's lifestyle. All these things are super positive, and so we should try to focus on the positives and hand check and correct, as we've always done in this nation. When something is going wrong, We got to correct it. But what I would say to my adversaries, my political adversaries, both inside my own party and my adversaries outside the party, is that we should have an unconditional love for this country. Mm-hmm. And stop right there, and we're all part of the same family. And so let's knit ourselves back together and get this stuff right, because the American people are really hungry for that.
And who do you think, so there's a lot of fake news that isn't reporting any of these important statistics and important things that have happened in the country. You yourself have been the victim of some fake news. CNN ran a total hit job on you, and they lost three reporters because of it. They even had to admit it. Who do you think, when you look around the political observers right now who are looking at this Trump administration, this Trump moment, who are offering the best analysis, analysis where you could rely on and say, okay, this is where the administration's going, this is where the country's going?
Well, listen, I mean, I'm
present company excluded.
Yeah. I'll give you guys a huge prop. I think you guys do an amazing job. You're really trying to get to the truth. You know, I'm very close to Sean Hannity. I do think that there are people at CNN, MSNBC, and other news outlets, individuals inside there that are fairly objective, that are trying to do the right thing. You know, what I don't like are these labels, okay? So if you're at CNN, you're automatically a Trump hater and you're automatically super liberal. There are pockets of people in there. Jason Miller, as an example, is a paid contributor to CNN. He was the communications director. There's a little bit of trivia. He was communications director for one day. Mm-hmm. I was the communications director for 11 days. You know, we're close personal friends. He's very pro-Trump. So you have pockets of people in these places that are actually trying to be objective, trying to do a good job. And when I say be objective, I'm saying they're pro-Trump. People say, okay, well, he's not obviously being subjective. I don't mean it that way. I mean, like, let's look for the truth. Let's try to focus on policies that are going to help the American people, common sense policies. Let's not overly politicize the situation. And I think there are people that are doing that. You brought up CNN. I actually have a pretty good relationship with CNN and Jeff Zucker and some of the news anchors there. Even the news anchors that don't share my political view, whether it's a Jake Tapper or a Chris Cuomo. But what I will say, though, is that the story that they wrote about me was singly sourced. They had one person.
Do you know who the source was?
You know, I don't. Yeah. Obviously, you know, I have an inkling of who I think it may have been. But here's the problem with all this stuff. These sources are all anonymous. They leak like sieves. This is a business practice inside the swamp that people do. You know, some of the people are sore at me because I speak my mind and I put myself on the record and actually declare what I think of people. They're doing the same thing to me. Except the problem
they're doing
is
it off the record.
Yeah, they're doing it off the record. They're doing it through
background,
cutouts. They're doing it through all of these like backstabbing, shiv-ish sort of ways of doing things. And I think your generation, the millennial generation, is sort of tired of this nonsense. You know, they don't like it. It's not serving anybody to do that. It's not beneficial to the country. And so what I'd rather do is, as an entrepreneur, is let's disrupt, let's hack the communications model. If you're going to hit me for 13 straight months and think I don't know that you're the guy hitting me, you know, it's a joke, okay? So, but I'll hit you back, and I'll hit you back directly, okay? And maybe we can get it to stop. Maybe we can get you to knock it off. But what I'm not going to do is just sit there and take it. So in the CNN case, I told those three guys, don't write the story. It's completely untrue. I've got a deep enough pocket where if you write the story, there's going to be a big commotion about it. I'm not the typical political operative, which is probably why I got fired so quickly, because I didn't handle the situation the way a political operative would. I handled it the way a business executive would or an entrepreneur.
Why would a political operative handle it differently?
Oh, they'd have been way slicker. They would have been as surreptitious as the other people. They would have done the whole howdy doody, you know, Richie Cunningham thing, golly gee, to everybody's face, and then they would have operated behind the scenes. You know, I did what a business executive would do. Say, okay, here's what we're doing. We got to change the culture. There's some bad actors here. The first thing you got to do when you have bad actors in a culture is you got to ask them to stop it. And you got to identify immediately the ones that think you're kidding. You got to remove those people from the field. And then by and large, other people start to meld together. Okay, so I was in the process of doing that, and I was handling it too aggressively. These are I've made probably 10 phone books of mistakes in my life, but probably 5 phone books of mistakes over those 11 days, right? I was just handling it too aggressively.
Do you think, because there's something very refreshing about Donald Trump. Donald Trump comes in, he's very aggressive. He doesn't beat around the bush. He doesn't do, in that Vanity Fair interview, which is a very entertaining and interesting interview, you refer to Reince Priebus as Howdy Doody or Richie Cunningham. Donald Trump doesn't do that, though. It served him well. Why didn't it serve you well?
I'm not the president. You know, I was his comms director. I needed to be a little bit more depth. I needed to be a little bit more subtle. I needed to be less aggressive. I probably should have taken the president's marching orders less seriously, less clinically. And you know, listen, I mean, at the end of the day, I made a lot of mistakes. I owned them. I apologized for them. And I've moved on. But what I'm not going to do is break ranks with the president, because he's a good man. He's doing a very good job. Stylistically, at times, he would probably be better served if he dialed into a different style once in a while. But at the end of the day, his report card, his record is going to speak for itself. We've got a Super Bowl coming up this weekend. Bill Parcells, whose protege Bill Belichick is arguably one of the best coaches in NFL history. These guys have a great line. My record is my record. I'll let my record say whether or not I'm a good NFL coach or not. And I think that's how the president feels about his presidency. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's notched an unbelievable first year. You can just look at the data.
It's the most conservative first year in modern American history.
National security context, labor regulations, a whole across-the-board regulations on different businesses. He's allowed judicial appointments. He's allowed these businesses to grow and prosper. He set an agenda that's pro-business friendly, which will lead to wage growth. The tax cut is having this unbelievable consequence that I don't think anybody truly expected. Secretary Mnuchin and Secretary Ross said last week in Davos that they didn't expect the magnitude of the businesses, large and small, that were offering up higher bonus payouts, higher minimum wages, more capital investments. This is all a result of making America's tax rate more competitive. Mm-hmm. So what are we learning from the president? Policy matters. What are we learning from the president? That he said before the State of the Union that his heart and soul is in the thing, and he realizes as president, as a politician, he has to be way more compassionate, because there are millions of people's lives that are at stake in terms of where the decisions are being made. So just think about what he did with the taxes. Millions upon millions of people around the world have benefited from
it. But
that.
CNN told me everyone's taxes were going up. All the news media, the New York Times told me the taxes are going
up. Some of the taxes, you know, look, my taxes went up.
Ironically, my taxes went up too because I'm in California.
Yeah, I'm in a blue state, and so the lack of deductibility was not offset by the decrease in federal marginal tax
rate.
But
80% of Americans get a tax cut.
Yeah, but the more important thing is it wasn't designed for you or me necessarily. It was really designed for, frankly, the people that I grew up with, to give them more disposable income in their pockets. And so I think it, by and large, it's going to be a resounding success.
Absolutely. And just the corporate cut, that alone, it's and repatriating the money.
Michael, it's making the country more competitive.
Obviously. And you see it. Even the IMF admits that. Do you think that the president is being served by his team? I think you get credit for knocking out some of his advisors who might not have been serving him very well when you left. Do you think he's being served by his team now? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys?
Well, listen, I mean, I do. I think General Kelly has done a good job. I'm only looking at it from a distance. I don't talk to General Kelly, but it seems like they're very well organized. It seems like they have they've got a good message. I think they're going to come out with a solution on the DACA situation. Then they're going to turn their focus to health care. I think that the team that I know, some of them that are still there from the campaign, whether it's Jared or Ivanka or somebody like Kellyanne Conway, I know they love the president. They're extremely loyal to him. They're great messengers for the president. There was an article today, which I share with a lot of my friends, about the successes that Jared is already having in the Middle East in terms of the design and implementation of that strategy and the eventual unveilment of the Middle East peace process. I think it'll be unique. It'll be disruptive, like so many things that the president's willing to do that other politicians, frankly, weren't willing to do.
I remember earlier on in the administration, some of President Trump's former advisors, say Steve Bannon, for instance, was reported widely to be criticizing Jared Kushner, criticizing Ivanka. Has the president made a decision on which way his administration and his staffing is going to go?
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, listen, I mean, here's the problem with all that. Like, he was trying to split the administration between globalists and nationalists. And Steve was also this guy that was trying to go for 120% of something, where, you know, the Ronald Reagan aphorism is you got to go for 80% of something,
right,
and hope that you can get that and reach a compromise with the other side, because that's the way the founders put the system in place. So that sort of divisiveness, that unnecessary leaking, that internecine warfare, the dropping of people's personal lives and the innuendo and all of that stupid nonsense that was going on inside the White House, that's certainly down. And so I give a lot of credit to General Kelly and for the president going in that direction.
Do you think we talked about the tweeting when he goes, he tweets these things and it's brash, and I really like it. I think it really leads the media all around. A lot of people, especially on the right, his critics on the right, say he needs to stop the tweeting. Go into a closet somewhere. Don't tweet. Just keep doing what you're doing, but stop. Do you think the tweeting helps him or it hurts him?
No, I think if the people that want him to stop the tweeting got on television and said, I want you to tweet more. Please send out more tweets and send out incessant tweets. Maybe then he would
stop.
Maybe I'll put the phone back in my pocket, right? So I have found, even on the campaign, when someone says stop the tweeting, the president would look at him and shake his head because he would say, listen, you're not seeing what I'm seeing. And what he was seeing, and you have to accept that this is true, some presidential historian will write this about him. You got to think about the use of social media by a 70-year-old man. Okay,
he's the most culturally tuned in.
You got to give him credit, right? And he's also great. You got to think about his idioms and the way he messages to people. There's always a little bit of a twist. He's the Frank Sinatra of tweeting. Okay, and now you're not old enough to remember Frank.
But Frank, I listen to a lot of Frank Sinatra.
But Frank had a personality that he added to his music. He was always on key. You could always find him a little slippage with the words, or he'd throw in an extra word that wasn't necessarily in the lyrics, and he would do certain things that added his charisma and verve to the song. And so the president does that. He's the Frank Sinatra of tweeting. You can always tell.
For all we know, he might be Ronan Farrow's father. We don't know. Who knows these things?
Yeah, he's definitely not Ronan Farrow's father. I'll take the over on that one. But what I would say to you about him is that when he's tweeting, you know it's his tweets. I think he could be at times more strategic. You know, if I was sitting there with him, I would say, listen, let your advocates, let your surrogates, excuse me, both inside the White House and outside the White House, do the job of defending you against some of the nonsense. You don't have to write about people's facelifts. You don't have to write about people's personalities. Let your media surrogates do that. Focus on policy. Focus on things that you want to get out there, focus on trying to bring the Democrats together on a DACA deal, things like that. But you know, listen, he's not gonna listen to anybody on that. He's got great media instincts. He went from zero to the American presidency in 17 months. No one in the history of the United States has ever done that. It's the toughest job. It's the most powerful job in the world. And there were a lot of qualified people in 2016 that wanted that job, and he slayed every single one.
Well, this is my question. I might not be old enough to remember Frank Sinatra, but I am old enough to remember the time when the billionaire who took over New York real estate and casinos and television and branding and then won the highest job in the world on his first go at politics, defeated 16 of the best politicians in the country, then took down the House of Clinton. I'm old enough to remember the time when people thought he might be somewhat intelligent. That's how old I am. Is the president, like a very stable genius?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, like I said, I mean, of course he's like a very stable genius. I mean, the funny stuff about that, when he's writing that, you can almost see the smirkish frog face that he makes while he's writing it because he knows it's going to set the hair on fire for all these liberals, you know? But I'm going to tell you something about the president. Okay, I'm old enough to remember when Dr. Martin Luther King's holiday, which was signed into law by President Reagan, wasn't appropriately honored with the same respect as other federal holidays. I'm old enough to remember when I was a young guy on Wall Street, probably your age, where Donald J. Trump and a group of leading New York businessmen, entrepreneurs, and Wall Street executives lobbied the New York Stock Exchange with the Rainbow Coalition, which was led by the Reverend Jesse Jackson, to get the Stock Exchange to close on Martin Luther King's birthday. And people don't want to give him any credit for that.
Because he's a big racist.
But you can find that on the internet. You can find the Reverend Jesse Jackson saying great things about his personality. And you can find that he's actually racially blind. He's colorblind. He's a guy that really wants people to do well. And he's been a winner his whole life. You know, you're talking about the Bill Cohen article. This guy is like a Michael Jordan. He's not a choke artist. He will hit the shot. I took a lot of flack on that in the press conference. I said, because I've seen him do it. Okay, and by the way, he hit the shot on the presidency. A lot of guys couldn't do that.
On his first try. On his first official try.
On his first try.
That, speaking of the smirk, by the way, going back to seeing the smirk when Donald Trump is tweeting that, Ryan Lizza ended your career at the White House. You had a phone call with Ryan Lizza from The New Yorker.
Yeah, I ended it, though. I made the mistake of trusting him, so I have to take personal responsibility for that.
But he participated in it, at least. And then a few months later, he was booted. He was fired from his job for allegations of sexual misconduct. Mm-hmm. Did it take a crowbar to pry the grin from your face when that occurred?
Hey, let me tell you something. You know, I'm a human being, and so my reaction to his firing was, okay, great. He's not going to be able to do to other human beings what he did to me. This is a very malicious, very nefarious, very evil doer. I don't know what he did at The New Yorker to get himself fired, but I know what he did to me. So I know what the personality type is. The reason why I'm a big believer in karma is that, you know, something bad could happen to you from a person like him, and you say, oh, well, someday he'll get his. And the answer is, of course he will, because the nefarious action that he perpetrated on me, he's going to eventually cross the line further enough where he gets smacked back. And
right.
So I'm glad he lost his job. It's not like I'm taking this like Schadenfreude of pleasure in it, because what he did to me was unconscionable. Howie Kurtz from Media Buzz said that his act towards me, he'd never seen anything like that in the 40 years that he's been in Washington. A journalist that would actually do that to a White House official.
It was so cheap. It was so petty.
Rahm Emanuel, President Obama used to say that, you know, they cut one of his middle fingers off, so therefore they muted his expletives. But Rahm was known to be a profane guy behind the scenes. President Obama
stabbed the table with steak knives.
President Obama himself, many others. If you think, and your audience thinks, that I'm the only person in the West Wing that's had a little bit of a potty mouth from time to time, you know, then you guys are not on the same planet that I'm living
on. Of course.
So what he did to me and the way he wrote the story, and if you listen to the tape versus the story, I'm literally having a conversation with him like I'm having it with you, except it's a little bit more neighborly. His father knew my dad for 50 years.
Yeah.
He said in the story that I'm lying about that. You can interview my folks. They know the Lizza family forever. He is right about the fact that we didn't know each other super well. We had met on the set of CNN.
Yeah.
He is right about that. But we were building a rapport with each other. And when I called him that night, I didn't think he would do that to me. But I am, at that point in my life, the White House communications director, and I shouldn't be trusting journalists like him or anybody for that matter, no matter what their last names are or what their connectivity is into my family.
Right, of course.
Or my neighborhood. I had to own that. And so I take personal responsibility for it. But here's the learning lesson for younger people that are probably plugged into your program. Own it, but don't let it be a millstone on your neck for the rest of your life.
Okay? Just move on. Just pivot.
What you have to always do in your life is forgive yourself and drop the millstone. Don't live your life with regret. Don't live in the past. Focus on the present and the future, and just make yourself better every day.
This gets to a point on a personal question. You graduated from Harvard Law School. You worked at Goldman Sachs. You founded two financial services companies. You turned them into big successes. Yet, in the public eye, you are the mooch. You are the zany, profane New Yorker that Ryan Lizza writes about.
Yeah.
Same with Donald Trump. Donald Trump graduated from Wharton. He had massive professional success. He rose to the highest level in the land. And yet, in the public eyes, he's this cartoon character. Donald Trump tweeting Covfefe, ha ha ha. Is there a political advantage to playing a little bit dumber or a little bit crazier than your mark?
Yeah, well, I mean, there is and there isn't. I mean, I think what they try to do, and they are sometimes successful, and they've been less successful with the president for a reason because of his persistence and his resilience, but the playbook move is to cartoonify people.
Especially for Republicans.
Yeah, two-dimensionalize them, call them racist. I mean, that's like, boom.
Guaranteed.
You're an auto-racist.
Jesse Jackson loves you. You campaign for Martin Luther King Day on the stock exchange.
Yeah, but
until you become a Republican, then you're a racist.
But you're a racist. But the point is that, like, If I have a voice that's credible, and I did go to the Harvard Law School, and I'm reasonably well-read, and have a pretty good idea about where the zeitgeist is going and at what policies make sense for the country, right? At the end of the day, if you really got to know me, I'm less focused on left and right, and I'm more focused on right or wrong. Like, what's actually the right thing for the country? I'm a libertarian by nature more than I am a conservative, and so if you ask me about the marriage equality movement, I honestly do not care who marries who. And so for 15 years, I've been a gay rights activist. The liberals will not give me any credit for that.
Of course not.
Because I've sided with the president on so many issues. And so I'm really an eclectic bag politically, okay? I'm not really purely streaked politically. I'd rather, like I said, focus on what's right or wrong as opposed to left or right. And I can also back it up with a lot of content. That is a disaster for an adversary, because if I'm doing that, that doesn't work. You've got to tell me that I'm the situation, Jim Dan Laundry.
Yeah, right, that's right.
I think Seth Meyers called me a human pinky ring. You've got to say that I'm a gangster.
I got to say, as an Italian-American from New York, that is slightly offensive.
I mean, it's like, really, the guy Ari Melber from MSNBC said I was like a studio gangster or a stage gangster. And I said, look, I'm an Italian-American, you know, that's like really offensive.
Imagine if they said that about any other ethnic group.
It's crazy. But you know what? Let me tell you something. You're a fellow Italian or you're half Italian.
Yeah.
You can't bring it up because you get no backup.
No one's gonna
back you up. It's okay to put the Sopranos out there and the Godfather and all that other
Jersey
stuff.
Shore.
And you brought up Justice Scalia, and what Scalia would tell you that he's a big believer in the First Amendment, as am I. Yeah. And I don't care. I own my heritage and I don't care about it. But what I won't do is sit in the shame box that my adversaries have built for me. What I won't do is allow them to contextualize me the way they're trying to. I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna come on your show. I'm gonna go on Bill Maher's show tonight. I'm gonna be with Chris Cuomo, boxing with him in the freezing.
Fredo Cuomo is what we call him here at the Daily Wire, but sure.
All right, but he's a friend of mine, so I can't.
He's your friend, I
can't really
be too
call
mean.
Him Fredo Cuomo. He'll get upset about that. But you know, listen, he has an ideological view that's very different from mine. He grew up in a Democratic family. I grew up in a Republican family. We see the world differently. Of course, my view and your view is the right view.
Correct.
His is obviously the wrong view.
Right.
But my point is, we can disagree and still be somewhat agreeable with each other. This whole nonsense where the president's delivering the results and nobody can stand and clap and everyone's got to have a scowl on their faces, you know, it was like a, you know, I was calling it Democratic detox instead of Botox, right? DE for Democrat. They all had the same plastic like look on their faces. Hey, you know, get over yourselves, okay? They're doing that for the cameras. They're voguing for the cameras so that their base will say, okay, yeah, be part of the resistance. Resist this guy. They did this to Reagan.
Even conservatives did it to Reagan in the way conservatives are doing it to Trump,
I find. They did it to Reagan early part of his terms. As he was delivering the results and they started to realize the kind of guy that he really was, it was very hard to hit him as much as they did. But Reagan made a very big gaffe before one of his televised speeches where he was joking around and he leaned into the microphone and said, we begin bombing in
I've
5 minutes.
I've outlawed Russia forever.
Yeah, and we begin bombing in 5 minutes. And so everyone went crazy. It was very Trumpian, frankly. You know,
right.
It was, oh, he's this, he's that. There were protesters and all this other stuff. But he was a peace-loving man. You know, he loved his family, he loved his country.
Wanted to abolish nuclear weapons.
Great writer. They didn't give him any credit for his writing skills. Reagan in His Own Words, if you have an interest in that book. It was a phenomenal book about his personality. And when you think about the president, our current president, he just has a lot of common sense. He's got a lot of wisdom, but he's a tough, brawler, aggressive sort of a guy. And he's doing a great job, and I predict he will continue to do so.
I have one observation and two final questions before we let you get out of here and go over to Bill Maher. The one observation, the one nice thing that I will say about Fredo on this program, Chris Cuomo, your friend, is the only time I can watch Chris Cuomo is when you are on his show and you guys are fun. It is some of the best TV that is out there. It is the only time I watch CNN.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit too crazy from Davos at 4 o'clock in the morning, but yeah. Listen, I mean, we get along, though. I mean, at the end of the day, I do disagree with him on the memo that just came out, and I do disagree
and
with
everything
him.
Everything else, yeah.
You know, and I tweeted out earlier today. You can go on my Twitter feed where you can see I'm being interviewed by him in March. President saying that there's been wiretapping going on. Now, Chris will parse that. He'll say, "Well, he said specifically it was him and Trump Tower." Okay, I understand that, but it's Twitter. It's 140 characters.
What he's really Trump Tower is a metonym for the campaign.
That's the point. He's really just trying to say more broadly that there was some nefarious activity or a lack of proper procedures in place that led to some politicized observation of people that were involved in his campaign. And so, listen, we can debate about whether it's right, we can debate about whether it's wrong, but it doesn't seem right. And if I were the Democrats and I was a Democratic strategist, I would actually get out there and say, you know what? Let's stop politicizing this. This just doesn't seem right, okay? They would have so much more credibility. Go back to July of 2016, you should have gotten out there and said, you know, we cheated or Bernie Sanders out of it. He deserved a fairer chance than he got. And all of a sudden, what happens is you're creating a restoration of trust with people where you're being that bold-faced in terms of your honesty.
And so they're never going to do it. They're
not
going to
do
it.
And by the way, they're not going to do it. And by the way, these operatives on the Republican side are not going to do it. You know, they're going to do opposition research. I mean, I was on Wall Street for 29 years, and I'm an Italian. I mean, Reince Priebus thought I had to have done something wrong.
Reince Priebus took out Oppo files on you, didn't he?
100%. 100% Oppo files on the company that bought my company. That was his personality. He was very proud of that. He was very, very surreptitious in terms of the way he did it. And so I called him out on it. And I, at the end of the day, I'm not a politician.
So you went up to it, because the Washington way to do it is to smile and say, oh, yeah, so that's nice, Ryan. See you for drinks later. Yeah,
yeah, no, I called him right out on it. And that's the other thing. People say, oh, well, you know, you were on the phone with Ryan Lizza saying nasty things about these guys, and you didn't have the courage to say it to their faces. That's totally not true. I mean, of course I said it to their faces, you know. But at the end of the day, if saying it to their faces, and I've taken some flack for saying it to their faces, but if saying it to their faces causes a communication disruption where the American people really start to understand how these swamp creatures act, maybe the shaming of that will put some of that to rest and people can start to subordinate themselves to the good of the American people, actually serve the American people. And so I'm hopeful. I'm hoping that will happen.
Two final quick questions, if we have time. There was a lot of North Korea talk in that State of the Union. It was an excellent speech. Mm-hmm. Ji Seong-ho, a North Korean defector, was invited. Mm-hmm. Only God can judge, but Donald Trump can arrange the meeting. Is Little Rocket Man long for this world?
I don't know. My guess is that I like the facts that are available to me today. You know, I had some better insight when I was in the White House. But the facts that are available to me today is that the North Korean leadership is talking to the South Korean leadership, and they've agreed to march together in the Olympics. And they're going to march under a unified flag. And so I take that as a very strong positive. I think that Moon basically said that it was President Trump's nature and President Trump's decisiveness and his pushing that got the two sides together. And so I do think that that's a breakthrough that really hasn't happened over the last quarter century.
They haven't communicated, period, for 2 years.
It's fun to watch people not want to give the president credit for that. And I understand why, because some of the stuff that he does is, quote unquote, non-presidential. But a lot of the stuff that he does is quite principled.
Right.
And so I do think if you're asking me to make a prediction, and that's a terrible thing to do because you always predict things that are wrong.
The good thing about political predictions, though, you can predict anything and you'll be wrong all the time, and then people still tune in.
You swiped a $400 check from Ben. I know
this would be one of the highlights of my professional career.
You're very proud of that. You know, that was a prediction that went your way, thank God. But I do think that there will be a de-escalation there because it's in the best interest of everybody. Mm. I'll say the same thing about Kim Il-un that you were saying about me or Donald Trump. He's getting caricaturized and he's getting two-dimensionalized as a cartoon villain.
Which is amazing for a morbidly obese guy, but he is being two-dimensionalized.
He is, but he may be absolutely ruthless. He may be horrific in terms of his morals and his scruples, but I don't think he's dumb. And I think he's a pretty calculating person because he has survived as a young man in that power structure after his father died. And so my prediction is he's a rationalist and he wants to survive. He wants that regime to survive in some form, the Hermit Kingdom. And so my prediction is it will work itself out over time.
He won't push it so hard that we're going to take him out.
He won't. But his button is probably smaller than the president's button.
I think that goes to that saying. That one on his. Marshall, can we get a button on my desk?
Another funny comment from the president. You know, I mean, you got to have me.
I love the button comment. Final question. How does this Mueller thing end? You know, in Washington or in New York, for that matter, you could indict a ham sandwich. It's very, very easy to do it. It seems like Mueller has to get somebody's scalp. He can't just let this thing completely go. Mm-hmm. Who gets indicted? How far up does this go?
You know, you were talking about this earlier. I do think that the issue now is going to make people doubly and triply more careful about the situation. I think so. So I predict a positive outcome. I'll go back to what the president said to the New York Times reporter, I think down at Mar-a-Lago, where he expects this thing to be resolved in a way that's judicious and fair to him. Mm-hmm. And I want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt that's involved with this thing, and say that will happen. I know that there's a lot of people on the left that they're part of the resistance and they want to remove the president and all this other stuff. But here's what I would say, you know, I mean, you know, be careful what you wish for. This is a very common sense, very practical guy. I love Vice President Pence. I'm not saying anything bad against him. But here's a guy that's really rising in power, rising in judgment, and the country's doing quite well.
Learning on the job. He's getting better every day.
The country's doing really quite well. So you should be rooting for him. You know, and you know, maybe you guys at Daily Wire wouldn't like this about me, but I went to law school with President Obama, and when he was our president, I was rooting for him because I'm an American. And I may not agree with his policies.
I like you anyway, Anthony. I like you. You know.
Like me anyway. I don't agree with his policies, and I would certainly debate his policies, and I would go on a television show or come on a show like this and explain to you why those policies are so damaging to the country. But I didn't want us to fail.
But you were in law school at the same time as Barack Obama.
I was, yeah.
So you got any juicy gossip? I want to hear something.
I don't. You know, this is the thing. I mean, like, I went to law school with him. And like, so all the teachers now say that they taught him, which is mathematically impossible. And all the people that were in law school at the time that he was there with them all
best
say
they friends with him.
But, you know, I didn't, I mean, I got to know him after law school, frankly. But I mean, I sort of vaguely remember him from law school. Justice Gorsuch was there at the time when I was in law school. Rod Rosenstein, this is a little bit of trivia, was actually in my section. So that's a person that you get to know because you're in the same section together, you know.
And how was Rosenstein?
Again, I haven't seen him in probably 30 years.
But, you know, in every section, I remember these little sections, there's always this section jerk who knows all the answers and did all the reading, and there's that guy that gets on everyone's skin.
Well, I can tell you, that definitely wasn't me. I didn't know the answers. I wasn't doing enough of the reading. I was playing too much basketball. But I remember him being a very quiet, studious guy. I just didn't have a personal relationship with him. So I'm not one of these guys that wants to exaggerate the relationships.
For a guy who's quiet and aloof, he probably ended up at the right place these days. All right.
Well, let's see what happens. Hopefully, I wish him well, and I want whatever is going to happen now to kind of simmer down, and let's all get on the same side, and let's do what's right for the American people.
Now, I hope when these cameras go off, that Anthony, you tell me about all of the Choom Gang hangouts with Barack Obama in law school. But we'll see. We won't be able to get it while the camera's on. Anthony, thank you for being here.
I would have definitely fouled him more on the basketball court if I knew the policies back then. All right.
Thank you for being here, man. I appreciate it. The Mooch is going to be on Bill Maher later tonight, so check it out. Is that going to be live or is that pre-recorded?
I'm not sure. It's 10 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. here on the West Coast on HBO. I'm pretty sure it's live to tape or it's live. I'm not sure.
And if it's not on, just rewatch this interview. You'll get a whole nother round
it'll
of Anthony Scaramucci.
It'll be on. It'll be a raucous night, I'm sure.
All right.
Donna Brazil will be there with me. She's a good friend.
All right.
Richard House from the Council of Foreign Relations. Pretty good crew.
All right. We'll have to tune in. What a great surprise. This is a nice breakfast and surprise show
today.
Great
to be here.
Everybody.
I'm long a lot of kosher food this morning.
Yeah, that's sad. To quote a great man, sad. I'm Michael Knowles. This is The Michael Knowles Show. Tune in Monday. We'll be back then.
The Michael Knowles Show is produced by Marshall Benson. Executive producer, Jeremy Boring. Senior producer, Jonathan Hay. Supervising producer, Mathis Glover. Our technical producer is Austin Stevens. Edited by Alex Zingaro. Audio is mixed by Mike Coromina. Hair and makeup is by Jessua Olvera. The Michael Knowles Show is a Daily Wire Forward Publishing production. Copyright Forward Publishing 2018.